Hi everyone, welcome back to Nos Vemos en El Place. My name is Luis Octavio and I'm your host and co-owner of El Place, along with Donna and Daisy. We are beyond excited to share these stories with you all because many times we go to these amazing shows and we rarely get to interact with the drag queens and really get to know them a little bit more. So the whole purpose of this or these series is to get to know people that worked, that hung out, that somehow, some way were a part of making El Place a magical place and an amazing place at that. So we're so excited to be able to share these with you. And the intro episode that we did got over 500 plays, which basically tells us that you all are interested in hearing these stories. And that makes us so, so happy and excited to be able to share these with you, because the performers, the people that gave a little bit of their heart to El Place are important. And we want to make sure that we continue to showcase these and that these stories don't go untold. So muchísimas gracias for your interest. Muchísimas gracias for sharing. And if you are somebody who went to El Place or has an amazing story that wants to share your experience of El Place, please send us a DM at El_place. That way we can schedule it and make it happen. We would love to hear from you. So in this episode, we get to actually chat with somebody who you all know and love, Melissa B. Fierce. And we're so excited to sit down with her and just chit chat because I feel like we're actually sitting down with Alfredo, the person behind Melissa B. Fierce, the person behind this amazing persona, character, alter ego, however you want to call it. So we're so excited about that. And this particular interview is extra special because we were actually able to sit down at El Place right before we cleaned everything out. We took everything out. And I think that made that interview or this interview that much more special. So we are beyond grateful, beyond thankful for each and every one of you. We hope that you continue to follow us and follow our journey, because as we mentioned during the last Sunday, it's not the end, it's the end of chapter one. And we have so many great things coming up that we are so grateful and excited to share. So just follow us, continue to follow us. But anyways, I don't want to take up much more of your time because this interview is fire and it's great. So acompáñenme to get to know more of Melissa B. Fierce and her story.
Okay. Thank you so fucking much. Thank you fucking so much. Luis.
So, ¿cómo te llamas?
Real like.
Well, a ver, no sé. Tell me.
Me llamo Alfredo Salinas. Y también I'm known as Melissa B. Fierce.
Uh-huh. So, do a lot of people know Alfredo Salinas?
No, I think just they just know me for my stage name, which is Melissa. Uh-huh. Even a veces cuando like I go out into like places like WeHo or uh-huh. stuff like that, people still call me Melissa. They don't know Alfredo.
Yeah,
but Alfredo. It's more like my close friends, my family.
Okay,
you know, and that's it. But I mean, I don't mind people calling me Melissa cuando we're
even out of drag.
Yeah, out of drag, I don't mind it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's how you kind of. You kind of see the difference, like who are your real friends and who are uh-huh. the ones who just party with you, you know?
That's a good way of putting it, I guess.
Yeah.
So, estamos aquí en El Place, formerly known as Noa Noa Place. And what do you think?
Empty. I mean, compared to when I first came here back in, actually, December.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my God, like, it looks weird.
It looks weird?
The shiny stuff around.
Well, I think to us, it was really important to interview you here because obviously you were a huge part of El Place. You're still a huge part of it. You're still, I think, a staple to us. And more than anything, you've become such a really great friend. And you have stepped out of the character Melissa B. Fierce and into getting to know you and knowing that way, tiene feelings, llora, has dreams, y todo eso. And I think that that's what we want to get from this interview, for people to get to know you. You know, you just mentioned earlier, those that call you Alfredo are those that are your really close friends mm-hmm. and your family.
Yeah.
And those that call you Melissa are, you know, people in the industry, people that you party with, mm-hmm. and, you know, that's part of it, right?
Yeah.
So, we met, do you remember how we met?
Yeah, I was on live, on Instagram, and I think I was getting ready for a gig, uh-huh. and I was doing my makeup, and you sent me a little comment on TV, and I was like, oh my God, I would have to talk to you.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, let's do it. But I think we had talked, I don't know if I had talked to you before. A while back?
I think so, because we were going to do something with Molcajete Dominguero, I uh-huh. think. And I think I had reached out, but it had been a long time yeah. ago. And then I saw you on the live and you were getting ready. But mm-hmm. because we're in the middle of COVID,
yeah.
I think you were getting ready for like an online show.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I sent you a DM and I said, hey, we're opening up a new place. It's called Noah Noah. And you were like, oh, sounds good. Send me a DM.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, oh man, that's such a great way to just brush people off, because you know, you had a ton of followers mm-hmm. and you were already well known. You were an established drag queen, and I thought, me cae mandar la chingada in a nice way, you know? But then I thought, okay, I'm gonna send her a DM. Let's see what happens. And you did respond. Mm-hmm. So I explained to you what the concept was, what we were doing. What did you think of it?
I was like, honestly, in this moment, I was just like, fuck it. You know, mm-hmm. Right now we're with COVID, whatever gig comes my way, the first thing comes my way, go for it, mm-hmm. you know? And I like to take my chances sometimes, you know? Uh-huh. Porque me gusta saber what happened instead of wondering in my head what could have happened.
What could have,
you know? Uh-huh. And I mean, you know, I take chances and never have regrets. So when you told me like the idea que tenías y todo eso, so I was like, why not? Go for it, you know? ¿Qué te va a doler? Nada. So I was like, let's do it.
Awesome.
Let's do it.
So I think that's one of the things that I loved about you, is the fact that you actually did return my call. And as I've gotten, or my DM, and as I've gotten to know you more and more, I feel like you are that person that it doesn't matter how big or how small mm-hmm. the gig is, you're always like willing to explore and to help people out mm-hmm. with their projects, which is what I absolutely love, because we were absolutely no one. I mean, yeah. we had like maybe 100 followers on our Instagram page.
Yeah.
So I've obviously seen a lot of interviews that you've done, because you've done quite a bit of interviews.
Yeah.
I've read a little bit about you, and I definitely don't want to ask the same things
yeah.
that these interviews have asked you, because I feel like anybody can just go on YouTube and or read about them, right?
yeah.
Which is something that I have.
Uh-huh.
But I want people to get to know more about you. So let's forget about Melissa B. Fierce. Mm-hmm. I want to know about Alfredo Salinas. Who is Alfredo Salinas? De donde es? What is Alfredo Salinas' story?
Well, I was born in Mexico, uh-huh. Acapulco, Guerrero. I was there with my mom and my dad. And my dad was a very abusive person. Every time he would get like really drunk, he'll come home and like literally beat up my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And it came to the point where my mom got fed up with it, and we literally ran away. My mom said, let's go, nos vamos. And we didn't even pack anything. We left with whatever was in our bags, in our clothes. Y nos fuimos con mi abuelita. And we were just there. And my dad was looking for us and looking for us. And we were literally hiding from my dad. And my mom didn't want to go back to that anymore. And it was really, really bad. Mm-hmm. You know, like now, like she has scars like in a few of her face because of my dad. How he would beat her up. And then from there, my mom decided to come to the US and left me back in Mexico with my older brother. And that, which like he, I mean, my mom left us in charge with my grandma, which was like the worst idea ever, because my grandma was really bad. Like my mom would send us money every month, and she would never give us anything. She would just say that she forgot about us. She would always lie to us about like the things that my mom would send us. And eventually, my oldest brother got in a really bad accident. He was in a motorcycle, and a car hit the motorcycle. My brother flew out the motorcycle and split his head open.
Holy shit!
So, my grandma got a hold of my mom and he was like, hey, you need to come to Mexico. You know, Eloy got in a really bad accident. I don't think he's gonna make it. So when that happened, we were in the hospital and my grandma was in the room with my brother, and my grandma saw my brother take his last breath. And then my mom like got there really late. Like she got there probably a couple of hours later. And then she like took it really hard because she couldn't even say bye to her son. Mm-hmm. So we, after that, we buried my brother and everything, and then that's when I came to the U.S., which I was 9 years old. And it was hard at first because of English, you know, I've never heard fucking English before in my uh-huh. life. And I always thought that English was like, how they make fun of it, like,
like in the novelas.
Like in the novelas, uh-huh. you know? And I'm like, fuck, like, what? I have to fucking learn, you know? And it was hard for me to learn. I was taking, I was in the ESL program, and it was so hard for me to pick up English. And I couldn't find a way. Uh-huh. And then my mom was like, hey, let's go move to Washington State because over there work was so easy to get. And we're like, oh, let's go. We went to Washington, and it was cold. It was always snowing, and then for us to go to like to get market, we had to drive like 30 minutes out the city to go to the grocery store, mm-hmm. And then there, that's where I learned English because everyone's white, so I had no choice but to like find a way. I had to pick it up, and I did eventually. I picked it up, and yeah, and then my mom got tired of being in Washington because it was so hard living there. Mm-hmm. It's fucking a cold state. Nothing but white people, and always snowing, so we were always inside the house. We didn't really go out unless we like, wanted to go play in the snow and stuff. So, and then my mom was like, after 2 years and a half, we decided to move back to California. And then too, growing up, like, I grew up very poor, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I grew up with, like, kids making fun of, like, what I would wear, like, my tennis shoes or my clothes and stuff like that. So, even like getting into junior high, that's when the bullying starts, you know, like people start looking at everything.
Right.
And what people pick on you and stuff like that. So I would always get picked on. And eventually my mom bought me my first pair of Nike shoes. And I literally I would wear those shoes everywhere, you know, and I would always go to school and I'd show them off and stuff like that. Yeah. But it was just my way of to like, appreciating, you know, like the little smallest thing that my mom did for me, and it was to buy me a fucking pair of Nike shoes, and then growing up, like being like, I won't say like very fan, but like obviously there were little things here and there of me that you can tell that I was gay, you know, like.
That's what I was like, gonna ask. You know? Like when you were in Mexico, right, prior to your mom going back because of your brother, unfortunately, mm-hmm. which. I don't think I've heard you mention your brother before.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of shocking to me right now. And again, I think this is why I wanted to really do this, because I know that there's so much more than what people see and what your yeah. Instagram followers see, right? Mm-hmm. So where did you know in Mexico before you came here? Because you were 9 years old. You were already, when did you have this inclination?
No, I mean, I always found an attraction for men. Like uh-huh. I would always like look at a guy and be like, oh my God, he's hot. You uh-huh. know? And I always knew, growing up, like
that was
something that wasn't mm-hmm. right. I mean, it was right because I am what I am, you know?
Yeah.
But in my head, because of seeing everyone, or even my family growing up in such a machista household, like my family always making fun of gay guys or calling uh-huh. them pinche joto or stupid things like that, you know?
Yeah.
So to me, it was wrong.
Right.
What I was doing, but I didn't know that yet,
uh-huh.
you know, so I think little by little I kind of eventually found out, you know, like, this is what I feel like.
How old were you when you first saw a boy? Because obviously I'm thinking it was really young that you were like, ay, me gusta.
I think when I came here.
So when you were in Mexico, you were just hearing all this like,
yeah,
es joto, machismo, uh-huh. ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, and you were like, oh, okay, so that must be wrong.
Yeah.
But you didn't really like, maybe feel attraction towards a kid or anything, but yeah. you moved here,
mm-hmm.
and then what?
And then that's when I started like, kind of like, oh my God, like I like guys, you know, like I like men. Uh-huh. And yeah, I mean, that's where everything kind of like went from there. And little by little I started developing like the like me accepting
uh-huh.
that I was
Do you remember like your first like crush? Like, do you remember like, cause I feel like I've been asked this before when it was like, when did you feel or when did you knew like, oh wait, I don't just like this kid as like a friend, but I like him, you know? Like, do you remember that? Do you remember that first person?
I would say probably when I got into high school, because in junior high, I was just growing up pretty much, you know, understanding myself. Mm-hmm. And I think when I got to high school, like I saw like the first guy that I was like, oh my God, I have a crush on this guy.
Uh-huh.
And it was a guy that I had classes with. And I would always, like every time he would come around, I would get chiquiada, not chiquiada, but like, oh my God, like,
Butterflies,
you know?
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And I would be like, oh shit, this is what it feels to like somebody, uh-huh. You know? But I never felt that before, so okay. To me that was new.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's when I started kind of like knowing, like, okay, this is how it feels to like somebody, uh-huh. But what's next, you know? And I didn't get to experience it to my 10th grade when I started like talking to other gay guys, like meeting other gay guys, uh-huh. Here and there.
In high school, there?
In high school, yeah. Okay. So, but then like at that point, like a lot of the guys were in like DLs, you know, like mm-hmm. In the closet still.
Yeah.
Because I went to Jordan High.
Okay.
103rd in Alameda is the ghettoest school there is in LA. And everyone was very like close-minded there. Uh-huh. Like, you know, everyone would like make fun of the gay guys that were out and stuff like that. So I didn't want to be called out like that, you know.
Uh-huh.
Not until I decided to join the cheer squad, you know, and I was just like, oh my God, I want to be a cheerleader, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I got in the cheer squad, and then from there, like, I got bullied a lot. But I mean, no me importó, you know, like, I was living my life, and I wanted to be that, to do what I wanted to do, not what other people wanted me to do. And I think that's what kind of, like, it made me the person that I am now. Like, I don't give a fuck, you know, like, people are always going to talk shit regardless, you know. So why not do you? Why yeah. Be happy with what you do?
I think especially yeah. In high school, I think that if you're this kid who is like, I don't give a fuck, mm-hmm. And you're in high school when it's like the most difficult time where kids could be so brutal and you're like, fuck it.
Yeah.
Like, already there, you've built such an amazing armor, mm-hmm. To like go on as an yeah. Adult. So you also mentioned that, ¿cómo se llama? That as a little kid, you would do these things. Like, what things? And were you made fun of, like in elementary, junior high?
Yeah, I was always made fun of me being like a little flamboyant little uh-huh. Kid growing up. I mean, at one point I did care, you know, but like I said, like I got to the point where I was just like, I don't give a fuck what goes around me. Like, I just want to like focus on myself and be me, uh-huh. And that's it.
So what happened to this kid that you were, that every time he came around, you felt butterflies?
It just kind of just died out.
Okay.
You know, eventually he got a girlfriend, and it was just like, not for you, you uh-huh. Know, to myself, not for you. Just do you, have fun. But like little by little, I started like meeting other gay guys and uh-huh. Like having like sex and stuff like that. So I started finding out like what it is to actually be intimate with a guy.
Did your mom know?
No.
Not through junior high, not through high school. Not.
I mean, I think my mom knew, because everyone says the parents,
uh-huh.
They all know, you know? Uh-huh. But I think she was very in denial. She didn't want to accept it.
Okay.
So to me, like, I always had to, like, I was always hiding from my mom, you know? I had my own room. So like every time I would get home from school, straight to my room.
Okay.
I wouldn't leave my room, just be in my room the whole time. Because I didn't want, like, I don't know, I was just scared, you know, especially kind of what they hear, like, growing up in a household, because I'm machista, like, always judging people. And especially my mom and my stepdad, like, they would always, like, be, like, talking shit about, like the other family's gay member or something, you uh-huh. Know, like, oh, ese pinche joto y el maricón, y mira, ese joto que lo que está usando, y always, so, in my head, I was like, oh, fuck, like, I'm not gonna come out to them and tell them anything about me. So... yeah, it was hard at first to hide it from my mom.
Yeah. And so you, I know that many times you've talked about these like tea party things, and that was in high school.
No,
parties?
That started after I graduated high school. I started going to Arena when I was 16, which was like my 10th grade. That's when I started like meeting other people, and they're like, hey, there's this club called Arena, and I was like, what's Arena? And I thought of Arena like an arena, like...
Sí, una arena deportiva, una arena de luchadores.
Yeah, like a sports arena. And I'm like, okay, let's go. And I would always sneak out of my house.
Okay.
At 16, okay? Imagine. Damn. 16, okay. Sneaking out of my house to go be a puta over there already, zorra. And and I would always sneak out. And my first time at Arena, I was just like, fuck, like... Wow, you know, like nothing but gay people or lesbians, like making out.
Walk me through that first time you went to Arena. And the reason why I'm so interested in that first time is because I knew about Arena and mm-hmm. Circus.
Yeah.
But I wasn't out of the closet. I wasn't out of the closet until I was 28. And so I would always drive there thinking like tonight's going to be the night that I get in that long ass line and then I go in there and I... Like, I felt like I was going to see the Wizard of Oz, maybe, you know? But walk me towards that experience, especially because you would sneak out of your house at 16.
Yeah.
Who did you sneak out with?
Just like, random guys that would invite me out. And I would always be like, okay, let's go out.
How did you get in? Because was it 16 and over? No.
No, it was all ages. They were on Wednesday nights. It used to be called Bootylicious.
Okay.
And they didn't card. So anyone, like, you could be 14 and they'll let you in.
Wow.
Yeah. So, to me, getting to Arena, I was like, oh my God, like, this feels like home. Uh-huh. You know, I felt like peace. I felt like I was welcomed because, like, everyone there, like, I had something in common with, you know, like, mm-hmm. we all like men, you know, we're there to have a good time. We are there at a safe space, you know, just doing whatever we were doing with fucking the guys that were there. And I don't know, it felt good, it felt right. And after that, I was literally always sneaking out every Wednesday night. And the next day for Thursday, I would wake up to go to school. I'd be like, oh my God, here we go. School time, you know, uh-huh. and I would go to school so tired. But I didn't care. I think I was just having fun and I enjoyed the moment that I was doing at Arena. That I was like, fuck it.
So you would sneak out of your house, come back. What time would you come back?
By like 2:30.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'll be up to go to school by like 6:30.
O sea, que dormías que cuatro horas,
four
maybe.
Hours, yeah.
Wow. And then did any of your teachers or anybody was like, hey, why are you always so tired? Well, would you go every Wednesday or every other Wednesday?
Every Wednesday.
Every Wednesday.
Yeah.
For how long do you think
it was?
It was
a while.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't know how long, but I know it was for a good minute. That's where I met Maya too.
No way.
Maya was partying the same time where I was partying. Yeah, that's how I met her. But the thing with me and Maya that we never like crossed like words like that. We just see each other. Like she would hang out with people that would hang out with the people that I knew. So that's why we were kind of all in that circle, you know?
Uh-huh.
But I never talked to her, nothing with her, nothing, nada, nada.
Do you remember having like your first boyfriend?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
In high school.
In high school?
Yeah, in high school. And he was, I was going into my junior year and he was coming into his sophomore year.
Okay. O sea, más jovencito.
Ninth grade. Yeah. And we were doing, what's it called? What's it called when you go to school and then do the, like a run through of the school?
I don't know, a tour or
no,
what?
It was no,
what
a is tour. It? Anyways, what they did is that they would have all the new kids come to school, check out the grounds, check out everything that we had going on. And I was working at the student store. Uh-huh. That was my first job too. Working at the student store, and I saw him come and grab some stuff from me. And I was like, oh my, you're so cute.
You told him that?
I told him that, yeah. I told him that. And he was like, oh, thank you. And after that, I would always see him. Like, after that, I would always like bump into each other. And eventually, I was like, hey, give me your number. Let's talk. And at that time, we didn't have no cell phones or nothing. It was always a house line, you know?
Yeah.
So... We,
well, you know, I don't know what that's like, but yeah. Why are you giving out our age, yo? You know, back then it was fucking a rotary phone.
Yeah, so, and then, eventually we became boyfriends. Mm. He joined the cheerleading squad también.
Okay.
And we were always together. Like, and I even have pictures of in my yearbook that people would take of us together and they would put them in the yearbooks. And I have him in my yearbook too. And I think I fucked up on him. And I think that's where I learned how to like, not to be such a fucking asshole with guys. Because after that, like, it came back to me, karma, you know?
Yeah.
And, in,
How long did it last? I mean, you guys were so young. This is like, you're telling me this, and I'm imagining like the gay version of like, Greece or something.
Yeah, I mean, it lasted like 2 years and a half. So
wow, that's a long time.
I was within my junior, senior year, and then after that, after that, his family found out that he was with me. His family didn't know he was gay.
Okay.
So when I graduated high school, his family found out, and then they like stopped him from like having a phone or not having a phone, from like
getting calls or anything. Yeah.
Nothing. So it was hard for me to get a hold of him. Uh-huh. So eventually I lost interest, you know, and I started seeing other guys.
Uh-huh.
And then eventually I was like, hey, it's not working now, you know. And then, oh my God, parece que le dije que era el fin del mundo because he went through it. And then to this day, like, not to this day, but like not that long ago, like I saw him somewhere and he told me, I hate you. Me dijo, like, I hate you with a passion, me dijo. He said that I was the first guy that I broke his heart. I'm like, fuck, like, I'm sorry, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I guess that's, and I was like, fuck, like, damn. And then after that, karma came back to me and someone did that to me too. So I was like, fuck, this is how it feels to fucking be heartbroken.
Yeah, yeah. Cause I mean, it's not pretty, it's not a nice feeling, right?
Yeah.
But so 2.5 years and your mom still didn't know.
No.
Or at least it wasn't open.
And that's when, okay, so you know how I told you that during that time he wasn't able to use a phone?
Right.
So he wrote me a letter.
Okay.
So the letter gets to my house.
Uh-huh.
My mom opens the letter, reads the letter. I come home from like wherever I was at.
Uh-huh.
And she goes, sit down. She called me to the room and I was like, oh my God, here we go. She pulls up the letter and she goes, what is this? And I'm like, oh my God. And I felt like this like the rush of a heat just went through my whole body.
El mundo encima.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my God. And he was like, explain to me what's going on, you know? And I was like, well, I'm gay, you know? What can I do?
This was your senior year?
This after.
After, yeah. Okay, so you were what, like 17, 18?
I was 18, yeah. Because okay. I'm a little late with my grade and your year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was already 18, still in school, and then that happened. I was just like, fuck, like, what do I do? What do I say? And then she was just like, she was so disappointed. She didn't know what to tell me. And after that, like, it was so awkward being at home. You know, my mom wouldn't talk to me. Not even my sister wouldn't even talk to me because my mom told her not to talk to me. And I got fed up with it. And I was like, fuck this. Packed up my shit. I ran away from home. And luckily I had one of my girlfriend's boyfriend was helping me stay at a motel. And not that long ago, we drove by it in Southgate. Southgate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Southgate. And I told her, hello, baby, that's a hotel. I ran away from home and I stayed there for a whole week.
So who paid for this hotel?
My girlfriend's boyfriend.
Okay.
Like, yeah, she asked him, hey, like, my friend's going through an issue, to problems at home. Like, he doesn't know where to go. He was like, oh, I got him, don't worry. And he was helping me. He, like, bought me food and, like, things for me to keep in the room. And I was there for a whole week. It was lonely. It was miserable. And, I mean, you know, going from being at home with your mom and your sisters to, like, nothing, being alone. And eventually I kind of gave up and I was like, fuck, let me call home. I called home and my sister picked up and then she was like, oh my God, where are you? Like, come back home, we miss you here, you know? Like, you're not here. And then my mom heard that it was me and she was like, you need to come home, you know? Like, we'll work things out. And yeah, at first it was very awkward and she still wouldn't talk to me. And I was just like, it was just weird being at home. I mean,
what did she say? Did she just straight out say, estoy desilusionada?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I mean, cause obviously it was a shock for her as well. Right.
Yeah.
But like, did she ever say?
She didn't say.
I mean, no. Obviously she didn't say leave.
No, she didn't say leave. She didn't say anything bad. She just said, I'm disappointed. I never thought I would have this in my family.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't have anything to say either. I was like, fuck, I got caught.
Right.
You know?
And how long before things got better?
Not that long. I think after that, what did I do? Oh, I eventually, I started going to beauty school.
Okay.
I went to beauty school. I signed up for beauty school. And then that's where my mom kind of like saw that I was trying to do like more than just be at home. Because at the point I was already graduating from high school. So I went to beauty school and she was helping me. So I kind of, that was a little like a push of like, to kind of like.
Of support, support, right? Of supporting you and. And so showing you love.
Yeah.
Like the so only way like, she knew
okay,
how.
Okay, cool. So she was helping me. So she paid me for my kid. She paid me for me to sign up and all that stuff. And then I would get home and she'll be like my guinea pig. I would always practice whatever I learned in school.
Uh-huh.
I'd be like, oh, mami, look, aprendí ahora en la escuela. Ven, te enseño.
Uh-huh.
So I would do her hair, stuff like that. So, yeah, and I think that's what kind of like broke that little awkwardness that uh-huh. we had going on because like that kind of helped for me and her to kind of like somehow connect again.
Like come back together. Yeah.
Yeah, pero no le to tanto. And I'm thankful that I decided to go to school because that kind of helped.
Uh-huh. Did you ever feel like a resentment towards your mom? Did you ever feel like, ay, esta señora, or like, why? Did you ever feel any kind of resentment or any sort of way towards her?
I did in the beginning because I felt like because of her, my brother passed away.
Uh-huh.
If it wasn't for her like leaving us behind and she would have brought us all together, none of that would have happened.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, I think everything happens in life. Everything happens for a reason. We all have a reason. But I think in the beginning, I simply see her like, why did you leave us? You know, like, you left us alone. You know, uh-huh. we were going through it. And that's when she found out that my grandma never gave us anything that she sent us. So after that, it was a drama between her and my grandma. They uh-huh. got into it. But it was just that. I never felt anything towards her because of her not accepting me. I think it was already something I already knew it was going to happen. Because,
uh-huh.
I mean, it's hard, you know, for someone to come out to their parents as a homosexual, you know, it's hard.
I think especially for Latino families, right? Because
yeah.
it's such a taboo subject still, right?
Mm-hmm.
I just want to share something really quick. When I came out, I think my parents were really confused and mm-hmm. they weren't accepting of it.
Yeah.
And then at some point I was already with my partner and I was like, you know what? If you're not accepting, I've been with him for 3 years. Like I have to be loyal to him and mm-hmm. he's now my partner, right? But then I went to a convention and a mom said, you know, I rejected my son when he came out and I was like so disappointed and I was like, why me? And blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah, right? And then she said something that really stuck to me. And I think to this day, I feel if I would not have heard that, I don't know that I would have the same relationship that I have with my parents. And she basically said, I realized that I wasn't rejecting him and that I wasn't disappointed in him. I was disappointed in myself because as a parent, our only job in this world when you have a child is to protect that child.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, how am I going to protect that child from being bullied?
Mm-hmm.
From, you know, miradas and from, God forbid, somebody not liking the way he talks, walks, or dresses on in the street
yeah.
and getting beaten up. So I guess she said, I wasn't rejecting my son. I was rejecting the world and how the world potentially could treat my son.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit, like, that's so hard, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like, we are so selfish
mm-hmm.
and we think it's us,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, oh fuck, they're not accepting us. But we don't realize that it's not us who they're not accepting. It's how do I protect them from the world,
mm-hmm.
right? And especially coming from these mentalidades of like machismo
mm-hmm.
and you just don't know how to deal with that.
Yeah.
So I think after I heard that, I gave my mom and my dad so much more credit because I'm like, wait, it took me 28 years to come out of the closet and be okay with my sexuality.
Yeah.
I can't expect for somebody that grew up in a different world,
mm-hmm.
in a different time frame, to just be okay with it overnight either,
yeah.
right? So anyways, just wanted to share that really quick. She found out by accident and you went to beauty school. And then when were you like, I want to do drag?
That didn't happen until like later. And I did do it during the time when I was going to beauty school, I ended up doing drag for Halloween. Every typical gay guy's, you know.
Claro, claro.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, Halloween, let's do drag, you know. Uh-huh. I think every gay guy does that too. Not every gay guy, but.
I'm like, wait a second, I haven't done it. Fuck. I'm so far behind.
David's like, me neither. drag didn't catch my interest till like later on. And then
Why? So, and how? How did that happen?
So, I went to a club called Oasis in Upland. Uh-huh. And at that time, I was with some guy. And he was like, oh my God, have you ever like been to a drag show? I'm like, oh, arena. You know, arena used to have the drag uh-huh. shows. And then he was like, no, a drag show, like a legit drag show. I was like, no, let's go. So he took me and I was like barely hitting 21.
Okay.
Barely hitting 21. And that's when I saw Raven.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh my God, this bitch is fucking so beautiful, you know? And I always see her now. Since then, I always like admire like everything that she did. Like she looks so like well put together. Her makeup's always on point. And I would always tell the partner, he was like, hey, let's go watch Raven every Sunday. Mm-hmm. They used to have the shows, and I'm like, oh, let's go, fuck it. And at the time, that's when I moved to Riverside too, so it was easier for me to go to Oasis because we were literally down the corner from there. And I think he told me one day, he was like, hey, why don't you do drag? And I'm like, well, I mean, I've done it, but not like legit done it, you know, like uh-huh. it was just like a lot, like just Halloween, I literally looked like a boy in a dress. Uh-huh. And I have a picture in my house too.
Oh my God, I need that picture. That's gonna be the cover story, the cover picture like for that. This. Yes.
So yeah, I still have it in the one. It's I even told them, I was like, look, maybe this is the first time I did drag, and I'll send it to you.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, I have it.
She's gonna get dragged. I can't wait to see all those comments.
So And then he was just to drag. I was like, fuck it. And I went to arena.
Okay.
In drag. In drag. Yeah. Okay. And then my name wasn't Melissa. It was uh-huh. Phoenix.
Okay.
I don't know for a reason. Like I always liked the name Phoenix.
Phoenix. Uh-huh.
And then that's when he was like, hey, you look like my friend, like, some girl named Melissa. And I'm like, Melissa, okay. I mean, he was like, you even have her attitude, to your mannerism and stuff like that. And I was like, really? And he was like, yeah. And I eventually met Melissa.
The Melissa.
The Melissa, yeah. And I was like, oh, I can see it. And then that's he was like, you should just call yourself Melissa. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, okay, fuck it. And then that same night when he called me, told me to name myself Melissa, everyone was asking me, oh my God, what's your name? And I was like, oh, it's Melissa. So ever since then, the names sticked to me. And I was just like, oh,
but wait, I obviously you're missing something because you said that Melissa was his ex.
A girlfriend from high school, not a girlfriend,
but like a friend. Okay, yeah. Okay. So I always thought it was like a girlfriend.
No, it was a girlfriend.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And
that's how you became.
That's how Melissa se quedó.
Yeah. And so, okay, so you went to arena dressed in drag, mm-hmm. and that's how it kind of became Melissa.
Yeah.
And then the Beefiers.
Beefiers, it wasn't just added. I think it was just. It was added onto it when I used to do tea parties. Uh-huh. And the tea parties, everyone has a crew name. They have the crews.
Uh-huh.
And then my crew was Be Fierce Ladies. But I never thought of it. I just thought of it like Be Fierce Ladies, you know, uh-huh. just Be Fierce. And my logo was a RuPaul. And then eventually I kind of like used that name to turn it to like a reminder to myself. So like, hey, Melissa, be fierce, you know, uh-huh. like always be fierce. You know, and I think everyone trips out on it because it's like, it's oh shit, if you think about it, it's like you're telling yourself like, hey, Melissa, be fierce,
yeah,
you know. And then yeah, that's how the name's just kind of like, y se quedó, sí, Melissa, be fierce.
Do you remember the first time you had an actual paid gig? And where was it?
You know what, I think it was, I did a competition at Bravo.
Okay, Bravo. In Anaheim.
Yeah, I know Bravo. Yeah, I did a competition in Anaheim, and that's where I met Morgan Michaels. She was one of the judges.
Okay.
She was judging the competition, and ever since then, me and Morgan, for some reason, me and Morgan always like we clicked, like we got along really good. And I won the first round, I won the second round, but I didn't win the main finale, and I was like, fuck it, you know, whatever. And that's when I started like getting like paid gigs like here and there. Uh-huh. But it wasn't like a lot. Like I feel like now, like I think since Drag Race have become such a big thing now that like everywhere you go, like these girls are demanding to get paid a lot, you know?
See.
Before it was like $20, $25, here you go, you know, that call it a day.
Uh-huh.
And then we wouldn't complain. And we're like, okay, fuck it. We're getting paid, we're still getting tips and stuff like that. So we're like, fuck it, I didn't mind. But yeah, the thing I started with Bravo, the competition that I did there.
So after you started doing drag, did you ever get to work with Raven at some point?
I did the competition she was doing at races on Sundays.
Okay.
But it was, I was always so starstruck that I would never like have the boss to talk to her and be like, oh my God, I look up to you or anything like that. Because she was so popular already. Uh-huh. You know? And yeah, no, no, no.
So
no,
she
no,
doesn't know.
No, she knows.
She knows. She knows. Yeah, she knows. Okay. Yeah.
Now she knows. Like last time I introduced him to David, and then his name is David too. So like, oh, my name is David too. Yeah, and then but she, now we get along good. She talks to me really cool. But yeah, she knows who I am now.
So, you've been doing drag now for how long?
I think like 13, 14 years now.
13, 14 years.
Yeah, but there was a point where I kind of stopped doing it because okay. I was dating some guy who didn't like the fact that I did drag. Yeah.
Ooh.
I stopped doing drag because of him.
For how long?
I think for like a whole year.
No, the dick. You always say that to people.
I do. You're coming back. You got me there. Yeah.
I mean, that dick must have been really long if you left drag.
Yeah. So, but I really like the guy, and you know what? I have his initials tattooed on me too. That was so stupid. Yeah, I was so dumb. I know.
Probably when
he hears this, you know, like, I'm like, oh, that's me. And yeah, so I stopped doing it because of him. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, I mean, if you're going to be with me and not on the drag, fuck it. I'll stop doing drag for you. So I stopped doing it for a while. I didn't do it. But it was something that I regret. Honestly, I regret it with a passion because, like, I think whoever's going to accept you, they're going to accept you for who you are, you know? It's for what you bring to the table and what. I think drag is just, to me now it's work.
Right. You know?
It's art and I love what I do. It's my job and it pays my bills, you know? But I don't think anyone should. Like, I think guys should see past that.
Past that,
you know, it's not that they wanna be a girl or anything. It's just, it's work. You know?
And who knows? Sometimes it might be, right? Sometimes they do want to transition.
Yeah.
And this is like the first step. I mean, everybody's story is so different and so unique, right? Mm-hmm. But I totally understand what you're saying. Whoever loves you should love you for who you are. And it doesn't matter what you do, right? At the end of the day, because they're getting to know you outside of, you know, the show and the, you know, the act y todo ese desmadre.
Yeah.
So... Correct me if I'm wrong, but did your mom see you in drag or saw the a drag show for the first time here or no?
No. She had already been to a couple of my shows. Okay. Yeah.
But she's seen you so many times now. That,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
How was the first time she saw you? Were you nervous? Like, obviously, I think you were
probably nervous. Yeah, I was nervous. And it was, I think it was in WeHo at Here Lounge.
Uh-huh.
And this was like a long time ago because Here Lounge is already gone.
Okay.
Chapel's already there. And, yeah, she went to see me. I was fucking nervous, and I got so fucked up for the same reason that I was so nervous that I didn't want to be nervous. I got so drunk, and she saw me really fucked up too.
Oh, really?
But she knew that I got fucked up because I was so nervous that she was in the audience. And then after that, she liked going to my shows. She was like, I want to go to these shows, and then she started going to my shows. She started going to my shows at 3:40.
Okay.
And then one time she took my whole family with them. And my cousins, my tias, my uncles were all there. And
wow, what a turnaround.
Yeah.
Right? From like, you know, not fully accepting you to now bringing the family.
Yeah, bringing the family to my shows. It was an experience for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still remember everything from that day.
What did your family say? It was my birthday too.
Nothing, they loved it.
Yeah.
They loved it. Tell me they would accept me and love me for who I am. They don't care. They didn't care. They weren't going to judge me.
That's so great. So. Yeah. Obviously, I've learned so much about you right now, and obviamente, yeah, you're human, you know, just like everybody else has ups and downs and pedos and struggles and triumphs and, you know, all these battles. Where does Melissa, now talking about Melissa, where does Melissa Bifiers get this wittiness from? Like, you're so witty and you're always like on point, and if somebody's trying to like talk shit, you're like clap back, you know, twice as hard, and it's like,
I don't know, Luis. Honestly, like, I don't know. Like, I see myself when I'm out of drag. And sometimes, like, I even told them, like, fuck, like, I don't know how I do it sometimes. I don't know where I get it. I get just me just coming up with just stupid shit, you know, uh-huh. like, or what I do, like, or even like stepping out in the audience and doing what I do. Like me, like, I would never do that, you know, like I'm such a, like, I'm very like to myself when I'm out of drag, you know, I'm very, and I'm not quiet, but since being like to myself and stuff like that. But when I'm Melissa, like, I feel like she brings out another element of within me, you know, that I can't be when I'm afraid.
Out of drag.
Yeah.
I feel like Melissa is this outgoing, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be who I am and I'm gonna have a good time doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's so weird to see it, right? To see you outside. I think I've seen you outside of drag a couple times.
Yeah.
And it's always so weird to like see this persona on stage and be like, all eyes on you, you command the stage, you walk in and it's like, boom, everybody's looking at you. But I think one of the things that I appreciate and admire the most of Melissa Be Fierce is not her style, because you have an amazing style. It's not the makeup, it's how well you transition from English to Spanish and how great you are at jokes and at just making people laugh. Like, you're so, so good at that. That I can't wait till Melissa has her own stand-up show, because I think you would do great. I think you would be so amazing at it. Have you ever considered that?
No, honestly, not really.
I think you should. I think you should, because you're so good. You're so good at commanding the stage and ¿cómo se llama? Entertaining people. You're really, really good at that. So we're here back now at El Place, a good 1 year run. Do you remember the first day you came here?
Yeah, I remember. I remember walking to the back dressing room too. And yeah, I remember where I wore that black dress with that flower patches on it. And I remember standing up right there, sitting there for the whole time, and just people walking in and taking pictures with me. Yeah, it was a time for sure.
Yeah, what did you? Yeah. I know for sure you felt weird, because I know that in one of your interviews you were like, "Yeah, I was like weird, just standing there, like not being able to interact with people." But what made El Place be a place that you wanted to continue to be involved
with? I felt when I first came, I felt so welcomed by you guys, by you, Daisy, and Donna. You guys were always like, so like, oh my God, are you okay? You need something to drink, you need food, and whatever you want, let us know. I felt at home, you know, and especially knowing that it was like Latin owned, you know, and it looked very Latino in here with the whole Juan Gabriel theme and everything. So I felt like it felt right to walk in here. Yeah, and especially even the second day when I came in, like it was more chill. Like I was able to like give the food to the clients and all that stuff. Is I wanted to interact with people, like find a way how to like still be able to like to talk to people and stuff like that. But yeah, and it felt good. It felt right. I felt like I was at the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that we loved about you, that, you know, here comes this amazing drag queen with obviously a ton of followers and a huge line of experience, and you were just so willing to like, here, let me take the food out to people, like become a waitress in drag, right? Like that really surprised us. It surprised Donna, Daisy, and myself. And from that moment on, we were like, oh my God, we have to figure out the way of like having Melissa be a part of this and helping us out. And soon you became the person that was in charge of like getting all of the drag queens together and putting together, you know, different themes. And I think that, you know, for those that don't know, because I've had people say, like, you guys curate such a beautiful drag show. Mm-hmm. And I just want to go on record and say that it wasn't us. Like, it was you.
Yeah.
Have you curated things like this before?
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple of shows before, which is at 10. Mm-hmm. I bartended in West Hollywood. I had my own show there for, I think, like for a whole year and a half. And then at 342, uh-huh. at 340, I used to have my own shows there too. I would always do it. It was called Be Fierce Sundays.
Uh-huh.
And I would do my own casting and all that stuff. So when you, like, when I already, when you guys asked me to take care of it here, I already kind of knew where to go to.
Yeah.
And how to plan the, all the shows and stuff like that.
Well, you and the drag queens did an amazing job, obviously.
Thank
and
you.
Then the songs, every song was so amazing. So yeah, I'm really, really thankful, and I'm sure if Donna and Daisy were here, they would say the exact same thing.
Yeah. No, I'm thankful for you guys trusting in me, you know, uh-huh. for giving me like, hey, here you go, take care of the shows, you know, just let us know how to just send us pictures,
uh-huh.
how to like what to have things ready for flyers, and I'm like, okay, I got it. But yeah, I think you guys also took a leap too of like giving that whole like just everything to me, you know, because I mean you could have easily been like, oh no, we'll take care of it. You know,
yeah.
I got it. But you guys were like, no, here you go. You guys trusted in me.
What did El Place mean to you? What did this space mean?
It meant a lot. I built a lot of memories here. I got to work with queens that I've never worked with. I got to work with Zai, she's now part of the house too now. You know, Reyna, also Marlo, and then, what was it?
Several drag queens joined your house,
yeah,
while you were here,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because I feel like we got to work to create a bond that we weren't allowed to do in other places. So I feel like this was like our home,
uh-huh.
you know, that like we came here to like to do our thing, you know, and in other places I don't feel we have that. Like we were literally like in and out, like do your thing. Do your show and leave, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here we came, we mingled in the back, you know, we had little shots or drinks, we talked, we'd play around with each other, you know, like, not like that, you know? Let me clarify that,
I was like,
okay?
Wait, what?
What are you guys doing in the back?
Yeah, exactly.
No, but just giggled, uh-huh. you know, back and forth, and I didn't get the chance to do it at the places where I had here, you know? So I feel like El Place had, like, this energy, like, that brought in people together. And I appreciated that. So I think El Place has a powerful magic behind it to bring people together, you know?
Uh-huh.
I think it meant a lot for me, you know, a lot. I built a lot of memories here in this place.
So one last question for you. What would Melissa be fierce in full-on drag, ready to go on stage, you're right behind the curtain, whether it be the curtain here or the curtain in any of the amazing places you perform at. Tell Alfredo the first day he got here, the 9-year-old Alfredo. If you were standing behind that curtain, ready to come out as Melissa B. Fierce, and Alfredo was right there next to you, what would you tell him?
I would tell him not to be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I would tell him that everything's gonna be okay, that life is gonna get hard, but that even though life is gonna get hard, you're gonna be a fucking bad bitch, you know? You're gonna grow up to be a strong individual, independent. You're gonna not gonna depend on anyone else but you.
Mm-hmm.
You are gonna succeed, and you're gonna have many people who are gonna bring you down and make you feel like you aren't worth anything, make you worth you are not worth time being here. You're gonna probably make decisions where it's gonna lead to like you hurting yourself, but because of that, it doesn't make you any less of a human. It's gonna build your character, and you're gonna be fucking a strong fucking person, and you're gonna fucking kick ass out there, and little by little you're gonna get to where you're gonna get, and you're gonna be a big person, a huge person, you know? Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And I really wanted to have this interview here because, you
this
know,
is home.
This is home. Yeah, this has home. Been home for the past year. But I think we're going to, you know, look for a new home, and we're going to create other bigger projects.
Of course.
I can't wait for you to continue to accept working with us, because you really do bring a shit ton to the table.
You know, I'm here. You guys are always coming to me. Place
another one. Awesome. So where can people find you? Give us your handles.
Instagram is at Melissa_BeFierce. Facebook is Melissa Salinas, unfortunately. And then on TikTok is MelissaBeFierce01. And that's all I have.
And your OnlyFans?
I haven't done OnlyFans in a long time. Look at David, like,
David just like cringe.
He's like, unless I get a percentage.
All right.
That's it, yeah.
Awesome. Muchas gracias. We love you.
I love you too.